audio performance is copyright 2012 by Dr. Gwendolyn Hustvedt and may not be retransmitted or rebroadcast in any format not previously and specifically authorized by the creator.
We were talking about routine finishes, and the purpose of routine finishes, they're done to almost all textiles, and the purpose of routine finishes is to prepare them for their future, whatever other finishes will happen, or just to undo the effects of the weaving. So in fact, a lot of the routine finishes are done at the same mill as the fabric is produced, because the fabric is kind of not really, not useless, but it's not easy to use before it has these routine finishes. So gray goods have had no finishes applied, right? We saw pictures are sort of dirty looking, okay? And in a lot of cases, gray goods are sold to converters who then dye them or print them or whatever. But a lot of times, even the gray goods will get washed or bleached before they're taken out of the textile mill. Yes, ma'am? It would be under aesthetic. Like I just, it's all part of one big long lecture, but we have to get this boring part done first. All right, so y'all remember the sizing, and we I had a few clever people who helped me identify that the starch or silicones that we use to help the warp yarns resist the friction and the tension of weaving would inhibit absorption of dyes or other finishes, so we have to take it off. Just for your edification, we will in fact be talking about several different words for the same thing. So scouring, I think this might be where we finished, is a fancy word for cleaning. And in fact, we will scour, we've used the word scour to talk about cleaning the grease or lanolin off of wool, but those are fibers. So this would be scouring that happens to the fabric, and we might even scour wool fabric again to get even more lanolin off of it. Scouring is to cleaning as scrubbing your kitchen floor with a bristle brush and baking soda is to spritzing it and wiping it with a paper towel. So we're talking a lot of hot water. We're talking a lot of detergent. So here's the first place where we start to see the dramatic environmental impact of the textile supply chain. Hot, soapy water, and lots of it, being released into the stream flows in regions of the world where they do not have adequate pollution controls. So you see these little spots right here, these little dots on this, that's not a dirty camera lens. Those are actually little bits of leaves or seed particles or other things that are still on the yarn from the cotton before it's been cleaned. We call these little spots NEPS, N-E-P-S. So neppy fabric would have little tiny spots on it. Now the wool scouring will also use sulfuric acid as a way to get rid of any burrs or weeds. We can't use sulfuric acid on cotton because it will damage the fabric, although we'll use a controlled amount in a finish we'll talk about later. But we can use sulfuric acid on wool because it won't harm the wool, but it will take out any little miscellaneous vegetable matter. And of course, the hot water and detergent is used to remove any remaining lanolin. And you can see here is a bath, a box that's full of the hot soapy water. We have, this is part of one of those continuous ranges, so we have big rollers that are pulling the fabric up and down in the water. Potentially it's a jig. So a jig will actually rotate it back and forth, so it'll pull it a bit this way and then pull it a bit that way until one section is clean, and then roll it all the way through and jig another section. Now we've already talked about degumming silk, but this is a process where we remove a coating that would prevent the absorption of dyes. So if we want to have the maximum dye uptake for our silk, we'll degum it. Of course, if we leave the gum on, we have that nice groupy texture, but the colors won't be as bright. Lots of designers take advantage of this by having degummed and raw silk together in one design so that they can have the same colors with different amounts of intensity based on the presence of the gum. Look at that frothy, hot, soapy water. So there again. Anybody know the difference between soap and detergent? I'm using the word sort of casually, interchangeably, but they're technically not, right? So detergent is a more modern thing. We all wash our hair with detergent and really love it, right? Gets our hair nice and clean, although there's a campaign right now to villainize at least one of the detergent ingredients. I don't know that it completely deserves that, but that's a separate issue, the sodium lauryl sulfate. The gist, though, is it would take a lot of soap to get something as clean as a little tiny bit of detergent gets it. And that's why we now use our laundry detergents are in pretty small bottles, because they've stopped adding water to the they actually realized, oh, no self-respecting laundress is going to believe that what used to take this much soap, right, to clean, we can now clean with this much detergent. No one's going to believe that. So we'll just add bulkers until we get the detergent to be as big as the soap used to be. And now we've kind of eased back. Detergent is a lot more effective than soap. So when I say soap, I don't actually mean soap. I do mean detergent. Now, there is a particular process that we can use for cotton when we want it to get really nice and clean. It's called cure boiling. And that's where we add an alkali, right? So the wool, we add an acid, but the cotton, we add an alkali, such as sodium hydroxide. And we raise it to a pretty high temperature. So I think this is probably the husband of that lady wearing the patterned pants that worked at the carpet factory. All right, but anyways, he's looking in the window. And I only said that because they strike me as the sort of people who would be married. He's looking in the window there. This is under really high pressure, so you can't just actually, you know, it's not an open pot. But we do this to remove any of the remaining pectin or other waxes that might be on the cotton. And this will be really helpful if we want it to become a nice bright color. Now, another routine finish that we will do specifically for wool is singeing. So we're sort of done with the cleaning things. Singeing can be done with wool, especially because, and silk, although silk hardly needs it, because of their flame-resistant properties. When we do this with cotton, all right, then we have to be really careful, and it's, to be honest, rarely done with cotton. The idea is that we'll just whip that fabric by an open flame, and the open flame will just burn off any little bit of extra hair. Can you believe back in like Marie Antoinette day, that's how they used to handle the fuzz? Right? So if you get a little bit of fuzz, they wouldn't like rub on some silicone or something to get the fuzz back down, right? So you had your big, curly, big hairstyle, right? It wasn't your hair anyway, right? You're bald underneath all that. Got this huge architectural thing on. Your hairdresser would take a candle and literally just burn off any extra hair that was sticking out of the design. Yeah, so singeing. And the nice thing about the hair in the wig or the hair on your head is that it self-extinguishes, right? But we will have to be careful with thermoplastics because they can melt. So we want to be careful that we don't get them too near the flame. And this isn't a super good picture, but you can see in the circled area there, there's this sort of this glow from the gas, the line of gas flame as the fabric is whipped by really quickly. That must be a fun job to calibrate, like how fast, how high, all that. All right. So, singeing, mainly done with wool. After we get the cleaning done, a lot of times, especially with cotton, we will move on to bleaching. And with bleaching, we have our choices. We tend to go with the oxidative bleaches, so bleaches that release oxygen. Of course, we're familiar with chlorine bleach. Right? But really, honestly, more often we use peroxide or perborate. But none of these bleaches are healthy for living things, right? So here again, we enter a zone of concern. We don't want to think that the chlorinated water or the water with peroxide in it is coming in contact with stream flows where we have fish or plant life or other things that might be damaged by the bleach. And unlike the dye process, where we might have an easy way to recoup the salt, for example, you can let the dye water heat the dye water and evaporate off the water and be left with some salt, or you can process it and actually get some of the materials back that you used in the dye process, reducing your costs, right? That's a good thing. There's no way to get chlorine out of the water or peroxide out of the water. You just have to try and concentrate it as much as you can, pull off as much clean water as you can, and then you're left with water that not much can really be done with. So it's kind of ironic, you know, the global organic textile standards, they built in there what they call the Walmart exception. But the Walmart exception is really code for the American exception. So of all the people negotiating, Walmart representing Americans, they said, you know, we like all the stuff we're hearing here to make the textile processing organic, to have the least environmental impact, to use chemicals that are safe for the environment. But we know that Americans will not buy things that are not blindingly, screamingly, blazingly white. Can I be an American anywhere in the world when they smile and they've got teeth that'll knock you over? They're like glow-in-the-dark white. Our products are allowed to use 15% more of all of the whitening stuff than other people in the world because Walmart convinced everybody Americans just won't buy it unless it's crazy white. I'm just sharing this with you because it means that we bear a disproportionate responsibility for the bleach and the bleaching. Ironically, they bleach fabric, they're just going to turn around and dye colors, right? So this is where some clever people working in the fashion industry could think ahead and could really say, okay, we understand Americans like their whites really, really white. We get that. But do we have to bleach all of this fabric? Or could we actually segregate some of the fabric knowing that our color trends for the upcoming year involve lots of colors where the resulting color isn't changed by the fact that we're using unbleached fabric? So I'd like to challenge you guys as you move forward in whichever industry you end up in to think about, ask yourself, do we have to when it comes to bleach? This is a little drawing that sort of shows you the process. You know, the previous machines that we've been using, they use open width fabric, so they're spread out over the rollers. But because these processes don't work best without the presence of air, we'll actually use tubes or pipes. So we'll bunch the fabric back up and thread it into, you know, like a kind of like dental floss almost. We'll floss it into this tube. So down at the bottom, they call there, it says the J boxes, right? They'll have the chemicals down at the bottom, and they'll swish it back and forth in that tube, right? And then they'll pull it up, they'll wash some of it off, saturate it. Maybe there's the peroxide saturator. Take it back into the J box and swish it around, right? And they'll do that several times. This leads us to some further finishes we have to do, which is to get that fabric spread back out again and flattened out again, because now it's been all scrunched up and sort of pulled and twisted. Here are the optical brighteners. We've talked about them before just a tiny bit, right? Optical brighteners are chemicals that can be added. They can be added to solution when we're doing solution dyeings or solution additives, or they can just be put onto the fabric in liquid form, often at the end of the bleaching process. And again, the optical brighteners or fluorescent whitening agents make white fabric whiter than white by endowing it with that subtle ultraviolet glow that we read, our eyes read, as being just a little bit bluer, thereby whiter. So if you've ever been to one of those blacklight parties, that's the sort of thing we're talking about. It kind of has that blue glow. As I've mentioned before, the cool thing about optical brighteners is that they also provide sun protection because they're absorbing radiation in order to retransmit the radiation in that ultraviolet wavelength. So they actually take radiation that would have been passed through to your skin and instead bounce it back off as this subtle blue glow. So the fact that we have optical brighteners in our detergents or that they're applied to fabrics actually is part of, but not the only reason why, textiles are really a superior way to protect yourself from the sun. So all the chemicals we can apply or the minerals we can apply are great, but in fact, clothing is the best option. And the great thing about the optical brighteners is that they're, you know, they're just applied to the surface. They don't really harm anything. We don't know of any evidence that they're bad for people, although you may end up with clients that get freaked out about the fact that the optical brighteners can rub off on the skin. But given all the other things we encounter every day, I would try to talk them down, see if you could get them to relax about it because of the sun protective benefits. We've already talked about mercerization, right? So this is the phase in which we would do the mercerization. And the handy thing about the mercerization is, again, hot alkali water. It just helps get the fabric even cleaner. Of course, we like mercerization because of salves, right? Up with strength, absorbency, and luster. Right? The big strong man eating that sandwich at Sal's there and wiping his shiny mouth with his absorbent napkin. Okay, down with shrinkage. And we'll do this to any cellulosic fibers, including rayon. So here's a sort of a little drawing. You don't have to draw these. I just think it's fun to show these to you. So this one here, we have the pad range where we squeeze on the caustic, we call it, the sodium hydroxide. Then there's these timing cans. The timing cans are just the fabric goes back and forth between rollers to sort of allow it to air and just slow it down a while, really let the hydroxide soak in. And then we go to this range here, it says tenter, and I'll show you, or we'll talk about tentering in just a minute, but that's where we stretch the fabric out, that provides the tension, and then we wash the alkali off. So mercerization is very common nowadays. Oh, I heard a little moan. Somebody wasn't quite ready. What about Joshua? Anybody from Joshua? It was another town we drove by. Boy, do they have a big high school. Really close. Okay. All right. See, so I was all up in your neck of the woods. It was really actually a nice drive. And the fun thing was I could get on my smartphone and I could look at the poor people over on 35 East or West, right? And they're all, you know, 2 hours, and I'm all hour and a half. Ha ha. Only I shouldn't say anything because if everybody starts going the back way. All right. So the reason we mercerize, besides the whole shrinkage benefit, we mercerize because it really increases dye affinity. John Mercer, the chemist, dye chemist that invented mercerization, was trying to improve dyeing. Not that he didn't care about shrinkage, but that's a nice side effect. So we see here an example, the same fabric, mercerized and unmercerized. That color is just incredibly much brighter. Now I'm going to mention, I'm pretty sure it's not in the test, but I know some of you really love having as much knowledge as possible. I had a student stop by today and tell me that she believes that she should be able to credit this class for improving her sales ranking at her work. So she has increased in the ranking of sales, so she's like now number 5, and she feels that being able to speak knowledgeably, right, the sound smarter part of this class is what has enabled her to increase her sales. I actually really believe that. A lot of students have told me that over the years, that they're better at their job because of this class. So this is something for people that might want to sound smart. Lots of cottons nowadays include elastomeric fibers like Lycra and spandex, which we're not really going to learn about in this class. They're pretty minor. Your textbook mentions, and they're not minor in their effect on our appearance, obviously, but they're minor just in, you know, they're just a couple small fibers. But if we have cotton that has Lycra or spandex in it, we can't mercerize in the same way. We can't apply the tension because we don't want to damage the elastomeric fibers. If they're stretched out when we put the alkali on them, they're going to stay stretched out. And then, like, what happens to the whole slimming effect of the Lycra if it doesn't bounce back? So slack mercerization is something that you need to pay attention to if you end up working in denim, for example, lots of things that have the elastomeric or stretchy fabrics in them. I'd love to do a study someday talking about the contribution of stretchy fabrics to the obesity epidemic, because I certainly think that having clothes that stretch with us sometimes. I think I did okay with not gaining weight over Thanksgiving, but we'll have to see, right? Christmas is coming. Here is the tentering range that I just mentioned. So you might have heard this term on tenter hooks, right? So these tenter hooks just hook into the edge of the fabric and pull it taut, which is stretching is required for mercerization. But good timing, even if we don't mercerize the fabric, if we bleached it and it got all bunched up, we want to stretch it back out again. And so tentering is a great process. So you can see here the fabric is stretched out, and then it's just run through these steam nozzles that just steam the fabric, and it's made back into the right shape. Here's the cool thing, though. While we're tentering it, if we're good at our job, we can fix some of the grain problems. So if we realized it was skewed, we can, in fact, unskew it by literally pulling it down and making sure that the two tenter hooks across from each other are on the same filling yarn. And so we may have to do some tugging in the beginning, but once we get the machine going, it's possible to remove that skew or to remove the bow, which is a little harder, using the tentering process. So if people just act like, oh, it's inevitable, the fabric's off grain, tough luck, you have to, you know, it's not our fault, it just happens sometimes. Well, no, it can be corrected if they took the time and effort. Here is a picture of the little clips. You know, basically they're just like, you know, little metal clips, so you can squeeze them up, and then the little needles come out of the fabric. This is the selvage right here, and you can see the little holes where the tenter hooks were put into the fabric. Anybody ever seen those little holes on the edge of fabric? And that's what they're there for. They're there because the tentering machine was straightening the fabric back out again. You have to watch out because those hooks can get rusty because of the steam, and so you want to make sure that if you're inspecting fabric that you're using for something, that you don't have rust marks in the selvage. That would indicate that they aren't keeping their machines clean. And if they don't bother to keep their machines clean, what else haven't they done? All right. After we get the fabric straightened back out again, we're going to iron it. Oh, we don't just say iron. How boring would that be? We'll use a nice, fancy technical term, calendaring. So if you've been working on your kit, you've had to write that down. Wonder, what on earth is this calendaring? It sounds like something an executive assistant would do, right? You know, oh, Mr. Beasley, would you calendar me for tomorrow, you know, and put in all my appointments or whatnot, right? I have an app now that will calendar me. It's spelt differently, right? So calendaring. And I believe there was probably somebody named Calendar that it's named after. More fun with rollers. Basically, that's pretty much what all of finishing is fun with rollers. So in this case, the rollers are smooth and hot. They're heated from the inside. The fabric is still slightly damp, potentially from bleaching, okay, or maybe from tentering. And so we just run the fabric over, and you can see in this picture there's all actually a little bit of steam coming off of the fabric as it goes over those hot rollers. So this is how we iron the fabric. And it also, again, helps us get it back to the open width. So if we decided not to tenter, we could use this to straighten the fabric out. Okay, so that is the end of routine finishes. In class on Wednesday, we're going to talk about aesthetic finishes. And then next Monday, we're going to talk about performance finishes. Okay, because our next exam is... Yeah, next Wednesday, right? So you have this time to watch your non-yarn videos. They're very short. Without you to talk to, I don't tell as many stories. I will return your kits in class on Wednesday. And that's important because kit assignment number 3 will open at class time at 12:30 on Wednesday. So you'll have your kit back, and then you'll have a week to do that assignment. So basically, if you already did quiz number 12, and we've just got one quiz left. We've got an exam. We have a kit assignment, and we're done. Unless you want to take the final, which I highly encourage, right, and replace that 0 with a grade. This kit assignment will open on Wednesday, yes.